This is a workshop speaker meeting on the topic of codependency kills, and we have asked Bryant and Cass to speak. I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Bryant.
My name's Brian. I'm an addict.
Hey, Brian.
Good morning, everyone. My clean date's February 25th of 05, right? I celebrated 21 years last night. We kind of stayed up last night at the restaurant, you know what I mean? With my sponsor and all my network and a lot of my friends in the fellowship and guys I sponsor. And, I was talking a lot about this, you know, commitment this morning, right? Because I knew I was going to be up late. And I was like, you know, I have full custody of my daughter. I went through a divorce a few years ago, had full custody of my daughter. So I kind of explained to her what I was doing this morning. So it wasn't like I was running out on her. So I made sure everything was in line, you know. Set up the little breakfast thing, text me if anything goes, you know, a little strange that you don't really recognize. Just allow me to help you, guide you through anything that you're uncertain about, right? And I was telling the cast a little bit about our dog. And, you know, Narcotics Anonymous has afforded me this life. You know what I mean? It has allowed me to make good, sound decisions when life shows up, right? When they gave me this topic, codependency kills, I'm thinking, man, I ain't never been a part of anything like that, right? Mm-hmm. But if you know, everybody suffers from this from at a different levels, right? And when I sit back and I look at my fourth step stuff, right? I realized that, you know, through my addiction, I would always take a hostage, right? I would always take a hostage. Somebody at work, had a job, had a car. Don't get high because I would have to share with you. You know what I mean? So it was kind of this little tick and tack thing that I always had thought I was this player or something like that, right? And I didn't know that the seed of codependency was being planted in me, mm-hmm. Right? I didn't understand, right? Because it was kind of like, I see, once I felt she needed me, right? Because she would always ask me, how are you doing? Are you okay? Do you need something else? And you know, it was always this need, right? And I fed off of it. An addict with that type of power feeds off of that stuff, right? I remember taking this girl through heart. Cars, crash the cars, stealing money out of the bank. Just this horror, right? And I remember this was probably mid-90s or so. And another codependency was my mom, right? My mom, she kind of, you know, I remember going, I was shuffled into the courtroom in handcuffs, right? And I was facing this jail time, and the judge says, is there anybody in this court that would like to speak on his behalf before sentencing, right? And I remember my mom got up in front of the court, and she shared about me before the drugs took over, right? And I remember thinking, I couldn't even remember who she was talking about, right? But I knew it was a good story at the time to present itself in front of the judge, right? And as she was going, right, she started to cry, like uncontrollable tears, right? And me, the self-centered part of me, kept saying, we got him now. I'm gonna get some probation out of this, you know what I mean? And so when she went and sat down, it was no longer a gimmick or a game because she was still crying. The show was over, but the weight of my addiction, I had finally felt it. You know, and I was in jail for a while, so I was a little bit clean. You know what I mean? My mind was kind of functioning properly, and I could finally feel the weight of the pain I had caused my family through addiction. You know, my mom, she was one of my greatest supporters. She would, you know, give me her last dollar, take the car, you know what I mean? And, you know, codependency, it was kind of, that seed was planted in me along this way. And even when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I'm still here to this day, right? 21 years later, I still, I find out that I practice those tendencies in relationships, not just male-female, but even with sponsees, my sponsor, home group members, you know. It's kind of like you dance on the fine line. Because we try to keep what we have by giving it away, right? I try to make sure I give you the tools that you need to functionally be a productive member of society. Give you every chance, every opportunity to get the same chances that I get. So that means, hey, sometimes I have to give it to you like it was given to me. You know what I mean? And when it was, the information that I'm giving you could be the very information that saves my life. You know, I was playing on my phone. I usually tell the guys I sponsor, stop playing on your phone, man. You can't play on your phone in this meeting, right? So one day I sat down and I played on my phone, right? And it was his chance, right? It was his chance. So when he jumped on me about me on my phone, right, the first thing I said, I was thinking, who the hell is this dude think he talking to? You know what I mean? I try to play a rank and a role, you know what I mean? But what I realized is that he was sharing it in my own information. So I couldn't kind of buck him. What I had to do was quietly surrender and put my phone away. Because the information I hand out could save my own life. I don't know about you, because this stuff still is important to me. I don't care what level, what stages of Narcotics Anonymous and your recovery, whatever stage you're in, I still need to hear specific items like the readings. I still need to hear the speaker. I still need to hear new information, because the disease of addiction adapts itself. You think that it was just a drug? When I found out once I put the drug down, this disease has spread its tentacles through other areas of my life. That if I don't take, you know, care and proper maintenance of this thing, I believe that my character defects will pick up exactly where the drug addiction took off. So the codependency thing was, I used to take these hostages, right? So I got clean. I started to get clean, right? And I felt, at that time, I took a suggestion. I felt that the relationship I was in was toxic, of course, right? And I needed to get out. So once I started to break away, get away, right? What I realized is that I was the hostage. She wasn't the hostage. I was the hostage. I didn't know it was so, it was disguised because the need was there. All the bells, whistles, and trick mirrors and smoke screens was there. I didn't realize I was a hostage. It took everything in me to get away. I mean everything. Because I was, you know, at my mom's house, and she would ride past. She would ride past the house. Ride past the house, ride past the house, ride past the house, ride past the house. I was thinking, they suggest do 90 meetings in 90 days. So I went to 90 meetings in 90 days and 90 restaurants too. 90 restaurants. After every meeting, we go to a restaurant, right? And,
I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's okay. And one night I came out of the restaurant and she was back in the corner at the restaurant, right? And I'm thinking, I didn't really understand it was stalking at the time until later on, you know what I mean? I didn't understand what it was at the time, right? So What happened was I was sharing with my network. So I bought this little truck that was I paid like $600 for this truck, right? I couldn't lock all the doors on the truck, right? So I would leave one door open, right? And so when I lived with my moms, I would get paid on Friday. If I worked Saturday, they gave me a different, separate check, right? So what I would do is with my mom, I would help her with the bills. But I would take the big check. When I first got clean, they wouldn't even let me get a bank account, right? So what I would do is I would take the checks and I would stick them in an envelope and stick them in my glove box, right? So one day, I come home from work, the door was flung open and all my checks were gone, right? And so at this point, I'm freaking out now, right? So I'm thinking somebody, but I started thinking, who knows that, you know, I keep these in here, right? So I called her, right? I said, hey, somebody been in my truck today. Have you been by there? Have you been in there? And she says, maybe. Maybe, what the heck is maybe? You know what I mean? So at this time, I want to take matters in my own hands. I want to go over there and we'll kick the door in. We're going to figure this maybe stuff out right now. You know what I mean? But what I did is I took a suggestion, right? What I did is I called my network, called my sponsor. So my sponsor told me, this is what he told me. He says, so look, what I need you to do is turn it over. I'm like, what do you mean turn it over? He says, if you take the law into your own hands, you could get in trouble, right? So he said, what I want you to do is go down to the police department and tell them everything that's happened. You give her the option first, right? So I gave her the option. She's still talking this whole crap. So I went down to the police department, right? And it's kind of funny because usually when I go to the police department, I had never been on this side of the glass before. You know what I'm saying? They kind of walked me in. They sat me down. They got me a cup of coffee. And they do got donuts. They eat donuts up in there. Don't let them fool you. So they had this whole thing up in there, right? And they sat me down. It was like I was finally being treated like a member of society. It wasn't like, you know, put your hand behind your back, shine the flashlight in your eyes. So the officer sat me down and he said, explain to me what's happened. So I explained to him what happened. And I said, well, this is the person I'm thinking who it is. So what they did is they wrote this whole thing up and they made no contact. So she couldn't contact me. So I read on social media the other day about this girl who texted this dude 167,000 times, right? Now, if I had, reported her, she was probably 168, you know what I mean, 1,000 times, right? And so when they gave us this, so she gave me my checks back. So I went to my boss, he made a list of all the checks that it was missing, and she gave them all back. But they had this thing in it that says no contact. So she kept contacting me. And I went to the police station again, right? And when I filed the case, 2 days later, my mom calls me and she says, why are you doing that to her? Right? So at this point, you know, because I told y'all the story about my mom would defend me in court. Now she's defending her, right? See, what I realized through my step work and all that, I cannot control the person that they are attracted to. If they develop a relationship, it's out of my control now, right? So when she said that, she says, so she says to me, I'm going to court with her. My mom says this, right? So at that time, So all the stuff that came, disease of addiction was on my back, right? I was angry. I was resentful. I was fearful. Because like I said, I went to court. She was there defending me. Now she's going there to defend her. So what I did is I called my sponsor, I called my network, and I said, somebody share their experience with me on this. And you know what they told me? Well, we don't know anybody with any experience on that. You're going to be the person to be, you know, gain the experience, right? So I'm thinking, what? He says, yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to, you know, practice these spiritual principles. So look, I would go to meetings. I would show up more. I don't know, because when life has a way of showing up unexpectedly, right, my meeting attendance should raise. When things are going and I feel like disease of addiction has got me in its clutches again, I should be on the phone more. When I feel that I don't have an answer to the dilemma I'm in, I should be around people that's feeding hope. I should be still standing on the trust that I found in Narcotics Anonymous. So that's what I did. I showed up regularly. And court came up fast. It was fast, right? Before I blinked, it was Monday morning. I'm thinking, oh no. Right? I got up. So I got to the courthouse and I kind of nervous. I paced outside and I called my sponsor right before and he said, are you by yourself? I said, no. He said, get by yourself. So I got by myself, and what we did is we said a little prayer, right? And what it did, it just calmed me down. I don't know, third step, I found my greatest source of strength and courage through the God of my understanding that I found here. That allows me to walk through the fear that I'm struggling with. So what I did, I went in there and prayed. And when I came through the door, now this was first for me too. I wasn't on the defendant's side. The state's attorney said, hey, come here. We've been waiting for you. You know what I mean? Come over here and sit right here. And look, this chair, when I sat in that chair, it was so comfortable. I ain't never been comfortable in a chair in the courtroom, but this time, I wasn't on trial this time, right? And I sat down, and the case came. She got up, right? And the state's attorney leaned over to me and says, She's lying. I said, yeah, okay. She says, I'm going to have to get her. I said, all right. And then she stood up. She says, but he's a drug addict. He stole all my stuff out of the house. You know what I mean? And, you know, for me, I like to try to, at this point, at this time, you're right. Yes, I did. That information is correct, but I'm on a different path now. If you're still trying to hold me hostage of the stuff that I did in the past, then yeah, you're reaching and grabbing for something that you can't use on me today. I've shut that door. I'm working on that stuff, right? So with the prayer in the beginning, it kind of helped me settle my spirit so I didn't react to everything that came in the court, right? So I kind of sat down and chilled out, and then they called. Check this out. They called my mom on the stand. My mom came up and I'm thinking, when the heck they calling her for? You know what I mean? And my mom tried to defend her. And the state's attorney leaned over to me and says, I'm going to have to get your mom. I said, you got to do what you got to do. Right? And, what I witnessed was my mom crying on the stand and realizing she was at the wrong place at the wrong time, right? And so she came off stand. They called like a little recess, right? And I went up. I talked to my sponsor, right, a little bit. And I went up to her after court was all over. She got put on probation and everything. I went up to her after court, right? And I hugged my mom. My mom supported me through some of my worst decisions, my most horrible mistakes in life. With these spiritual principles and the program of Narcotics Anonymous, it was my time to support her and hers, even if it was against me. You know what I mean? What I'm supposed to show is empathy and compassion. I'm supposed to show the invisible God visible. I'm supposed to take all, because this, a lot of times this stuff is not, you can't use your feelings and emotions on this stuff. A lot of times. I have to get that stuff out of the way. You know what I mean? Because shoot, I don't feel like being the better guy all the time. I don't want to keep showing up. I would rather sit home and watch TV. I don't want to keep walking through all these feelings. It's a lot of hard work doing that stuff, man. But what I found out is that if I keep doing it, I get a little bit better. And, you know, once I kind of gave my mom a hug, and we kind of like sort of, this program kind of changed me to a guy that shows his emotions a lot, and I kind of cried with my mom. And what I've realized is it allowed me not to hold a resentment against her. It allowed me to not place an unrealistic expectation on her. The wrong place to put those things, right? So what it did, it allowed me to, we started to work on our relationship. Our relationship got better and better and better. And she's still my greatest supporter, but up until she passed a few years ago, unexpectedly, right? He's telling me I got 5 minutes, so I'm going to hurry it up, close it out, right? But I was, I got the phone call, like 6 o'clock in the morning with my dad, right? And I have never seen or heard my dad cry like that. It still trembles in me, right? So I got up when he was describing to me, and I tried to, he lived 6 minutes away from my house. Took 6 minutes for me to pray. I was angry, I was resentful, and all I kept saying was just give me, let her hear my voice. I think I could, this is how powerful I think I am. Just let her hear my voice. I think I could change what's going on right now, right? And it's a little hill on top, right? And I stopped at the top of the hill, and I said to God, if this is it, it'd be your will, right? It'd be selfish and self-centered for me to keep her here, and she's in pain and suffering. So when I came over the hill and came around the corner, the ambulance kind of was empty, and my uncle was shaking his head like this, and I kind of had to accept the fact, right? It was tough. My mom, my biggest supporter, right? I had to accept the fact that, hey, you know, me and my dad butted heads like this the whole time, right? It wasn't until we both lost that woman in our life that our relationship got better. I had to let some resentments go with him. I had to say that, hey, we love the same woman. It was my mom, his wife. Still to this day, she's been gone for 3 years, right? Still to this day, when I go to his house to help him out or whatever, he still has all the pictures on the wall. Everything is still the same. And now, through that loss, my relationship, my love for my mom, now transcends over to him. So, thanks for letting me share. I'll keep coming back.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Brian.
Yes.
Thank you. Now, our second speaker is Cass.
Mic is full.
Hi, I'm Cass, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Cass.
And I've been codependent all my life myself. I truly, truly have. All my life. And, you know, oh yeah, by the way, I'm I'll celebrate 38 years in 2 weeks. March 14th. And I think it's is that better? So anyway, from the time I was small, I was abused terribly. And I always used to say, you know, poor me, and poor, you know, but I did play a part in it because I allowed it to happen by, even though I was a little child, I never told anybody at all. And as I became older, you know, I married a man that beat me constantly, and I didn't leave. And it was really because I was a people pleaser. And like sometimes he would get in trouble and I would feel sorry for him. I can't believe it, as cruel as things were going on. You know, I very rarely called the police until, you know, I was in another program for a while. And I got enough courage to get out. And I was still a people pleaser, though, believe me, for many, many, many years, even in recovery. Codependent, I want to say codependent. Like today, I say I'm codependent, but I'm proud of it because I do it so it's not overdone. It's not overdone. I still can help people and say yes without abusing myself. You know, once I got out, and then I got into Narcotics Anonymous, I was still a people pleaser, you know, like, when I first went to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't stay very long, really, the first time. I stayed for 3 years, and like towards the end of the 3 years, I was going to one meeting a month, whether I needed it or not. And I only went to one meeting a month, so people would say, are you still going to meetings? And I'd say, yeah. You know, but really I was just kind of almost driving by. You know, I'd get there late and leave early. And I came back, and that was in 1988. I came back, and someone asked me to share when I came back, and you know, just share in a meeting. They were chairing a meeting, asked me to share, and I got up, and they didn't know that I was high, and I shared for 15 minutes how I was using successfully, and nobody told me to sit down and shut up, or share when you're not using. And nobody told me that, so I just kept sharing. And I was very shy and never shared anyway, ever, you know, in the beginning. So I just kept coming back. Matter of fact, I called Bernadette back there, and I met her at a meeting at GBMC in Towson. And we went to a meeting, and since then, I've been clean. But I was always a people pleaser. Always, 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 in every way. Bernadette told me to do stuff, and I did it because I didn't want to use. I really did. But another part was, I did it for her. And whatever worked, it worked. You know, she told me to, you know, because she told me to, every meeting I go to, hug somebody. And I was scared to do that. I did not want to do that. And she said, also tell them you have a lot of self-centered fear. I did not want to do that. But I did that for her. I really did. I did it for her. Because I wanted her to like me or whatever. I was a people pleaser. I did it to be codependent. But it worked. It worked. It kept me clean. You know, I did a lot of things that was codependent. But it's okay. It's okay. It worked. It worked. You know, because I did. It took me 3 days to go to a meeting and give someone a hug and tell them that that I had a lot of self-centered fear. And I at that time, I went to 22 meetings a week. So I had to do it 22 times a week. And, you know, and I did it for a long time. And eventually what happened is, and it took 18 months, I hugged a person and I felt, I seen all these little sparkles all over the place. And I felt love for the first time in my life. And it was absolutely, positively wonderful. And, you know, it worked. You know, with my kids, I have three kids, two boys and a girl. And my one son, he's like my derelict son. That's what I always refer to him as. But I love him with all my heart. Right now, he's in a nursing home. And he had 11 strokes. He's got everything that you can think of wrong with him. And I do things for him now. But, you know, in the beginning, he was in so much trouble. I used to tell him, don't call me when you're using or when you're drunk. And so sometimes he'd call me and he'd say, Mom, I just want to let you know that I'm drunk. And that's why I'm not calling you. And now, you know, and I got him out of trouble once because I learned pretty quick in a program that enabling him was being codependent. And I paid $400 to get him out of jail one time, and I had to drive to Pennsylvania, and it was 4-5 hours to this place in Pennsylvania. And it was in the middle of the night, and I never did it again. And I told him right then and there, don't ever call me, because I'm never, ever going to get you out of jail. Never. And I never did. I never did. And, you know, but now I do help him. I went to see him just once, because he is in, where is he at, Bernadette? Indiana. I always say Missouri, I don't know why, but he's in Indiana. And he's a long way away. And he was a truck driver and just kind of settled down there and liked it. And my other son, I'm codependent with him too. And he's sick too. He has Parkinson's. So, you know, now I do help him when I can. But, oh, my God, he just used to drive me so crazy. He used to, you know, say, you have to be on my side. You're my mother. Even if he was wrong, you have to be on my side. You're my mother. And I was. I was on his side because I was his mother at times. And then I learned that I didn't have to be on his side because I don't have to always be codependent. But, you know, with my sponsees, there were times that I was so codependent with them that they didn't stay clean. Some of them. I felt bad for them. I just felt bad for them. I don't know why. I just don't know why. But I learned pretty quick, don't feel bad for them. And I got really, really, really tough. I did. And I learned that from Bernadette. She used to be so mean. You don't believe it, but she used to be so, so mean. And now she's so mellow and sweet and nice. And she's my best friend. Anyway, you know, I did learn to be tough. And it just works. It just works not to be codependent in a way that you can kill people, because it does. It kills. It not only kills the person that you're being codependent with, it can kill you too. You know, because, you know, just staying with somebody that's saying yes all the time, excusing their behavior that's being codependent, you know, and it can kill you, it can kill them. You know, why would I let anybody get away with the stuff that they get away with? Why? Today I would never do that. I would never, ever, ever do that. And nobody better ever hit me. You know, ever again. You know, I've been hit too many times in my life, and I always tell my daughter, my other job is breaking kneecaps, and I just might. You never know. You never, ever know. Like me and Bernadette, when she stayed at my house when I broke my shoulder, we used to watch serial killer movies, so I have a lot of ideas in my head. So be careful. Anyway, you know, I'm codependent, and, you know, my codependent story is a little bit different. But like I said, I'm codependent and I'm proud of it because I will help people and sometimes a little bit too much. But I think when I do, I think somebody needs to be on their side. You know, sometimes there's just nobody on their side. Like the people in the street that you know, always begging for money and all. I never give them money, but I will buy them food. I'll take them in 7-Eleven. I'll buy them a pack of cigarettes, a coffee, a sandwich. But I always buy them stuff that they can't return. I learned that first, too, because I bought somebody something. And as soon as I walked away, she was in there returning it. So, if I buy them a pack of cigarettes, I'll say, open it. Make them open it first. But, anyway, I'm codependent and I'm proud of it, and my name's Cass, and that's really all I have. Love you all.
I want to thank both speakers, Bryant and Cass, for sharing a great meeting. As a reminder, the free entertainment for Saturday night is the comedy show in the Fitzgerald Ballroom, and it starts at 10 p.m. And don't forget to visit the merchandise, hospitality, and grab a coffee from one of the coffee stations. Can we close this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer? God. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Coming back.
Thank you.